Aloha. Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns over the air and online at koacountry1077.com and at lava1053.com. Now, here's your host, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha. Good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. We're here talking story every Sunday morning, 6:30 a.m. on Koa Country, 107.7 FM, and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. Big mahalos to our sponsor, Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitar, at Queen's Shops and on Ali'i Drive, right across from Hulihe'e Palace. You may listen to the podcast of Island Issues online at lava1053.com and at koacountry1077.com. There's always discussion of drugs on this island, how much of a problem we have, what other crimes are influenced by drug use. And right now, the online news publication Civil Beat and Hawaii Public Radio have been running a series about crystal methamphetamine, or ICE, use, and that plus some TV shows about heroin made me want to get an update on what actually is going on here on Hawaii Island. Our Hawaii County Police Department is divided into two areas with one vice lieutenant in each, and I'm here with both of them this morning. Sherry Bird has been with the Hawaii Police Department for 18 years, and she's been the Area 2 vice lieutenant for the past 5.5 years. Before that, she was in charge of the Area 2 Vice Section's ICE Task Force. The primary focus of her group is to investigate narcotics offenses. Prior to this vice assignment, she was a patrol officer in the Kona and North Kohala districts. Aloha, Lieutenant Bird.
Aloha.
And let me just ask you before I go to your colleague here, how many people on your vice team, Lieutenant Bird?
Counting myself, I have a total of 16 officers assigned to my section. It's commanded by myself, the lieutenant. I have 4 detectives and 11 officers, 3 of which are narcotic canine handlers. And I also have 3 officers that are assigned to our airport task force, and they are DEA deputized as task force officers.
You know, we're here today to talk mostly about drugs, but the vice section does more than just drug offenses. Is that correct?
Yes, we investigate other offenses such as cruelty to animals, gambling, prostitution, moral offenses like that.
Okay. We're also with Mark Keoki Farias. He's been with Hawaii Police Department for 27 years, and he's been the Area 1 Vice Lieutenant for the past 3 years. Before that, he was a patrol lieutenant in the Kona District, and before that, a sergeant in both Kona and North Kohala districts. Before that, he was a vice officer in the Area 2 section. And before that, he was a patrol officer in Kona and South Kohala. Good morning. Aloha, Lieutenant Farias.
Aloha.
So how many people on your team, Lieutenant Farias?
I have a total of 13, including myself, 5 detectives, 2 canine handlers, and the remainder, they're investigators.
So this is a curious question. You're going to tell me whether I'm correct about this or not, but what I get from the police media reports is that the drug problems on the east side of the island tend to be a little more prevalent than on the west side, yet you have fewer personnel than does Lieutenant Bird. Why is that?
Well, 3 of her positions, they're attached to the airport task force. So it basically is an island-wide task force, but they're based out of Kona.
I am guessing that although your primary job is to do the drug arrest, do your patrol officers, just the officer on the street, do they also make drug arrests?
Yes, they do. Oftentimes they do, and they'll refer cases to us or ask for our assistance since we specialize in that area.
Do you help train the regular patrol officers in what to look for relative to people who may be committing crimes, but the root cause is drugs? And when I say crimes, it also could be car crashes.
Yes, we do. We often do in-service trainings with the patrol officers at their briefings to help better their investigations when it comes to the initial narcotics cases that they may come across. Yes.
Lieutenant Bird, can you give us a sense as to what our situation is here, like how many drug investigations you're doing now, and perhaps compare it to some time in the past to give us a sense as to whether the situation is better, worse, or the same?
So I can speak to calendar year 2015, and I'm speaking island-wide. For 2015, both of our vice sections have initiated 1,862 drug-related investigations. And during that time, we've seized 36 firearms, 37.5 pounds of crystal methamphetamine, 364 grams of cocaine, 178 pounds of marijuana, 541 grams of heroin, and 782 diverted pharmaceutical pills. So compare that with calendar year 2014. Again, both vice sections, we initiated 1,774 drug-related investigations. We seized 26 firearms, 11 pounds of crystal methamphetamine, 3 pounds of cocaine, 119 pounds of marijuana, 218 grams of heroin, and 1,673 diverted pharmaceutical pills.
I'm kind of astounded. Now, it's the number you listed in 2015, as I recall, what you just said is around 1,900 investigations, and the year before that, 1,700. So the number's going up, but that's a big number. I'm kind of shocked. How do you guys manage that kind of workload, Lieutenant Farias?
Well, we're lucky that we have, you know, guys in our sections that are go-getters or workers because they're busy every day. They have no downtime.
Do you have a sense as to how many other crimes, such as burglary, are related to drugs? Is that the kind of statistic you all collect?
Well, we don't collect that statistic per se, but speaking, I think, collectively for both sides, we can attribute a great majority of residential burglaries, business burglaries, thefts from vehicles and things like that. A large portion of that can be attributed to drugs. People seeking the opportunity to get items that they can exchange and sell in order to get money so that they can go and buy drugs to feed their habit.
I know that when we get car crash information from Hawaii County Police Department, oftentimes they will mention whether there was drug use, alcohol use, some other kind of impairment. Do you have a sense as to how many car crashes actually are related to drug use?
Yes, I do. Again, for 2015, we had 15 fatal car crashes, 13 of those involved impairment, and 7 of those involved strictly drugs, while 5 involved both drugs and alcohol. And of those, drugs involved fatalities. A majority of those fatals involved marijuana.
That's interesting to me. I know that the county passed an ordinance asking the police to make marijuana enforcement alone a low priority, to not just be looking for marijuana. But it sounds like marijuana is something that comes up as an incidental cause in a lot of the either straight old drug arrests or drug investigations that you're doing or in these car crashes. And so I guess my question is, to what extent do you focus on looking for marijuana users compared to other drug users?
We really don't focus on marijuana users. We have the medical marijuana laws that we need to be very aware of, which we are. With regards to marijuana investigations, if our investigations take us that way, we're concentrating on the illegal marijuana cultivators and the marijuana distributors.
In general, and let me ask Lieutenant Farias, for other kinds of drugs, whether it's crystal meth or heroin or whatever other drugs happen to be on this island, is that also the focus? Is your focus trying to find the distributor rather than the user? Or with those kind of drugs, are you arresting somebody illegally using those kind of, I personally call them significant drugs?
Well, our patrol guys usually come across the users, you know, whether it's via a car stop, you know, in the middle of the night or... And so, you know, they would get arrested because they're in possession of any type of illegal narcotic. But for our investigations, we normally go after, you know, drug dealers, the dealers themselves. You know, that's where our focus of our investigation is.
What do you think are the biggest problem drugs on our island? And as I started this, I mentioned that TV shows recently have been focusing on heroin. Civil Beat and Hawaii Public Radio have been looking at crystal meth. What's your sense for this island? What are our problems?
I would say our biggest problem on the Big Island would be crystal methamphetamine.
Lieutenant Farias, for your area, would that be the same?
Yes, that would. Crystal methamphetamine is by far the worst. Yeah.
Several years ago, and it might have been back in 2005, I did an interview with then Executive Assistant Billy Kanoi, and then I think he was a Lieutenant Marshal Kane Hailua, who were involved with the ICE Task Force. And at that time, they said they thought most crystal meth was being imported into this island, not locally manufactured. What's the situation now, would you say?
It's still being imported. It's too hard to get the precursors or ingredients to crystal meth. It's way cheaper, and it's easier to just either mail it or, you know, ship it into the islands.
Okay, so that's interesting to me, because what they say is that it's really easy to make crystal meth, and that's why in this state, for example, if I want to buy pseudoephedrine, which is a drug that I can use, it's an antihistamine, so if I have Vogue symptoms or a cold, that helps me personally. But I have to buy it behind the counter
a lot of the precursors are regulated, or at least, you know, pseudoephedrine or ephedrine is either regulated or you need a prescription for. So it becomes very difficult. They have a database that actually collects data on who purchases what amount of pseudoephedrine. So, you know, you could be buying it, but you'll show up on a list somewhere.
What is the age, gender, ethnicity of drug users here on Hawaii Island, would you say?
Well, that's the thing about drugs. Doesn't matter if you're male, female, young, old. Probably the youngest I've seen is around 12 years old, and the oldest up in the 80s. So there's no boundaries. It doesn't matter what kind of job you have, what your living situation is. It affects anybody that's willing to try it.
Well, if we're talking about meth, why do people use crystal methamphetamine? What does it do for people that makes them, number one, use it? You know, how does it make them feel? What's the benefit to them of doing this?
Well, I would have to say that they say that it's the feel-good drug, right? So it starts off with some positive effects on you. It gives you energy, makes you feel good. But after a while, it starts taxing your adrenal gland, and it starts taxing your body and your heart. And sooner or later, it consumes you as an addiction. So it's, you know, something that you have to, first of all, be able to support. And usually it's the only way to support it is with some type of illegal activity, property crimes. So it's just a downward spiral for the remainder of your life, because, you know, they say it's one of the hardest drugs to kick. It's the hardest addiction to kick. So once you try it, a lot of the commercials say not once, you know, don't try it, not even once. Because once you try it, they say it's that addictive that without help, you can't get yourself out of it.
When you talk about having 1,900 drug investigations, what I see when I look at the press releases that come out, my sense is that a lot of the people you arrest for that kind of drug for ICE are not, in fact, between 12 and 80, but they tend to be focused more in, I will say, the younger men between, I don't know, 18 and 35. Am I completely wrong about that?
Yeah, I think it doesn't matter. It affects everybody. It doesn't matter.
And you're arresting people of all ages for using meth?
Absolutely. Like Lieutenant Freya says, it really doesn't matter. No particular age group, just affects everybody.
How about heroin? How much of a heroin problem do we have here on Hawaii Island, Lieutenant Bird?
We have it here. I wouldn't categorize it as big of a problem as crystal meth. It's a problem, yes, but not as high up, I guess, as crystal meth is.
And how about prescription drugs that are improperly used, opiates, oxycodone, or whatever else it might be?
We do see diverted prescription drugs in a lot of the cases that we're involved with. Those aren't necessarily our focus, but typically, as an example, if we do a search warrant on a house, say, for crystal methamphetamine, it's not uncommon for us to come across prescription pills as well.
Lieutenant Frias, I asked Lieutenant Bird this, and although I think she was probably answering for the whole island, what's your sense relative to both heroin and opiates?
Well, opiates is a problem. We do see a lot of it, but most of the time we usually conduct an investigation related to methamphetamine, and then when we execute a search warrant on our house, we'll find assortment of pills, opiate pills.
First responders in other places on the mainland have talked a lot about finding people who are overdosing on heroin. And although it sounds like we do not have the heroin problem as much here, to what extent do your officers come across people who are overdosing on heroin? And the reason I ask that is a lot of first responders in other places are provided with an antidote to heroin overdoses called Narcan or Naloxone. And it's something that police can use or fire department. Do our officers have that? Is the heroin overdose such a problem that we want to equip our officers to save people's lives if they're overdosing?
We don't experience that too often. And most of the time when we do see it, it's after the fact. It's too late. You know, we don't normally run into a person that is, you know, overdosing at the time. So we don't carry that. Our officers don't carry that.
And a brief interruption to remind you, this is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. We're here Sundays, 6:30 a.m. Koa Country, 107.7 FM, and at 8 a.m. Lava 105.3 FM. Thanks to Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitar at Queen's Shops and Onali'i Drive across from Hulihe'i Palace. Today we're talking about drugs with the vice lieutenants on the island, Mark Farias, who's on the east side of Hawaii Island, and Sherry Bird, who's on the west side of Hawaii Island. Next week, we begin a series of four talk stories with four of the mayor candidates. Next week, it's Pete Hoffman. July 10th, it's Wally Lau. July 17th, Harry Kim. July 24th, Marlene Hapai. Now let's get back to our talk story about drugs with the two vice lieutenants from Hawaii County Police. Lieutenant Bird, since you've told me that ICE continues to be still a problem, I want to ask you about a couple of things. First of all, years ago, we had an ICE hotline that people could call if they suspected friends, neighbors, relatives were involved with that. Is that something that still exists?
Yes, absolutely. And we get phone calls very frequently on our ICE hotline. Yes, it's still active.
What is it that people are calling in to report?
So oftentimes we'll get calls of people that are concerned that their neighbors may be involved in some sort of suspicious activity, possibly narcotics activity. A lot of the frequent complaints that we get are high volumes of vehicular traffic at a residence. People get out of their cars, run into the house, come back out, and then the cars leave. They're there for a couple minutes, nothing that would indicate that it's a family visit, so to speak. And then a lot of the cars are doing the same exact thing, so that raises the neighbor's suspicion that something's amiss there.
If you were to get such a call, what would you do?
So as I mentioned, we do get a lot of those calls. So what happens is the vice officers will get out there. They'll try and identify who the resident is, who the property belongs to. And, you know, the neighbors might not know. They might be involved in legitimate activity. Maybe they have a business going on. Maybe the neighbor doesn't know about. But sometimes it does lead us to individuals who are known to us to be involved in narcotics activity. So we would go about our investigation and try and develop our evidence and maybe work on identifying the visitors to the residence to see if those are people also known to our office and see if we can't determine if they are involved in legitimate or illegitimate activity. And hopefully from there we can gather the information that we need if it goes that route to get a search warrant to get into the house and see what actually is going on.
Do you set up surveillance, like, you know, stake out a place?
Surveillance definitely is a big part of our investigations, yes.
What's the number for the vice hotline?
For the Kona side, ours is 3290-ICE, so it's 3290423.
And Lieutenant Bird, is there a separate number for the east side of the island?
Yes, for that side of the island, the number is 934-VICE or 934-8423.
But I'm assuming if somebody calls the wrong number, you will take care of it and make sure that the information gets to the right location.
Yes, definitely. And it happens, so we'd share the information where it's appropriate.
Okay, so if we know that ICE is one of the biggest problems on the island, are you doing anything proactive to try to stop crystal meth from coming to the island?
Yes, some of the proactive steps that we take is, as mentioned previously, part of my team consists of three officers who are dedicated to our airport task force, and they are cross-deputized with DEA, and some proactive measures they take is actually they go down to the parcel businesses and try and locate suspicious parcels there of narcotics that may be coming in, not just on the Kona side, but the Hilo side as well. They also conduct operations at the ports of entry, such as the Kauaihai Harbor and the Hilo Harbors.
So you say you look at the package companies, which would be, I guess, FedEx, UPS, things like that. How do you actually do that? Is that where your vice dogs come in, or is there another way you look for drugs?
Yes, the officers will take a look at the packages and determine if they're suspicious. And then if they do determine that a package is suspicious, they can call upon a narcotic canine handler, and that package can be screened. And then another proactive method that we also use is we do operations down at the airports. Sometimes we get information of people that may be coming in carrying drugs, concealing drugs. So we have to do our investigation as far as that's concerned.
How do you find out if people are coming in on airlines bringing drugs?
Good old-fashioned police work. It takes a lot of work on the guy's part, surveillance, operations, as we had talked about earlier, just getting information from various sources and trying to develop that and seeing what happens. Sometimes investigations work out in our favor in that we recover drugs from people, and sometimes it doesn't work out in that we don't ever get to that point. But good old-fashioned police work.
So once you arrest somebody, I know you have a certain amount of time where you have to charge them or you have to release them. How often are you able to actually charge them the way you want to? Because I know you have to work in concert with the prosecuting attorney's office. So give us a sense as to how that is going, because clearly you can do all the good police work in the world, but if you can't get the person convicted, then it's not a satisfying outcome for anybody.
It's a constant battle. You know, we put together a case and we have 48 hours to charge the person, a suspected drug dealer. You know, you have case law that you have to work through. You got to satisfy the prosecutor's office because naturally they're going to take this case to court. And so it's a constant battle for our guys. They work hard at it, and sometimes it doesn't work out in our favor. And, you know, we have to walk away from it and, you know, fight another day.
Lieutenant Farias, in drug cases, sometimes we hear about something called forfeiture, which I believe means the police can seize property that's associated with drug sales, but I'm not really clear on that. What exactly is that?
Okay, it's called asset forfeiture. It's a process to seize proceeds from drug businesses, drug activity, illegal activity. Being that not all drug dealers or drug users, they're motivated by money. So that's another way to take their proceeds that they got through illegal activity.
Well, it sounds like if their motivation is definitely money, that's sort of hitting them where it hurts, huh?
Exactly. That's hitting them where it hurts the most, right?
Do you have to get court permission in order to seize those assets? Or when you go in to arrest somebody, do you just automatically take things?
We don't have to have court's permission, but it's a civil process that we have to go through. You know, you can't just take someone's belongings without cause. So normally, if it's money that we're talking about, currency, we would have to have either recovered the money or currency with narcotics, or the currency would have to have a scent of narcotics on the currency itself. And the process to recovering your belongings, if it is seized, is that you'd have to satisfy the courts as to how you got that money, how you earned that money. You'd have to prove that it was earned legitimately and not through a drug business.
I get the sense, because I do look at the police media reports, that a lot of the people who are involved in these particular kinds of crimes are repeat offenders. Even I have gotten to know the names of some of the drug guys just because I've seen their names so often. And that's just my sense. But is that the way it is? Do you constantly have new criminals coming in? Or do you sort of know who a lot of the criminals are?
There's constantly new people. But we know the drug dealers, like, they know who we are and our guys are. And like I said, it's a constant battle. And I guess the biggest misconception is that the public, they think that they'll call us and say, okay, well, you know, these are the drug dealers, and they give us a bunch of names. And these are the drug dealers, and they give us a bunch of addresses. And that's great that we can identify people. And a lot of times we already know who they are. But, you know, there's a lot of police work that goes into drafting a search warrant and coming up with the probable cause to go. You can't just go into someone's house on the mere fact that somebody reported them as a drug dealer. As much as we wish we could, you know, we can't. A lot of times, like, they'll call the drug hotline and we'll keep in touch, you know, we'll call them back, and they don't understand why it's taking so long. You know, people are still congregating at my neighbor's house. I'm still having traffic at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's been 3 months and you guys haven't done anything about it. But the fact is, the guys have done a lot, and we still don't have enough to get a search warrant for the house. Sometimes it takes a long time.
Any sense as to how long the average case will take to bring to fruition?
You can't tell. We just had a complaint. It was sent to us from Assistant Chief Kela. It was just somebody that called his office, and it took us a day to get into the place, which is not common at all. That's very uncommon. But, you know, it just happened to work out that way. And there's cases where you could sit on it for half a year, and you know what's happening there, you just don't have the information or the probable cause to get into the residence.
I know that many people consider drug addiction not so much a crime, but a disease, and that's true, although these people oftentimes commit crimes, and that's a really bad thing. But I also know that in Hawaii County, we've set up a drug court for offenders who have committed nonviolent crimes related to drugs in a way to allow them to get off the drugs and get out of a life of crime. Talk a little bit about drug court, how well that works out for Hawaii County Police. You know, is that something that you feel is a good thing and helps you ultimately provide solutions to the problem? Because I know you have to be involved when people are in drug court. Somebody from the police does, yeah?
Yes, our community policing section actually are a part of the drug court process. For me, I believe that drug court is a good opportunity for those that fit the criteria. I've seen a lot of success stories come out of drug court, for which I'm really thankful. It's always great for me and refreshing to see people that have been involved in narcotics investigations repetitively. And it's good to see them a couple years down the road after they've completed the drug court process. You know, they're successful and they're clean. It's great.
We've talked mostly now about crystal methamphetamine. What other drugs, Lieutenant Farias, are you seeing as the biggest problems and things that you are mostly concerned about?
Well, you know, in the methamphetamine family, we have MDMAs. It's a synthetic form of methamphetamine. And, you know, it's associated with raves, social type drugs, cocaine, MDMA. Now they have spice. They keep changing the structure, the molecular structure, I guess you'd say, of spice, so that whenever the drug itself is deemed banned or becomes illegal, somebody changes the structure of the drug, and then that compound is now not illegal anymore. So it's a constant battle with that type of drugs too. We're just starting to see it more here. So I don't know what kind of problem that's going to be. I mean, we have a big problem with methamphetamine as it is, and, you know, to have additional drugs entering our communities is just a constant battle.
It's funny you mentioned spice. I don't actually know what it is, so I'm going to ask you what it does, what the impact is. But I heard a report on the radio that did say they're changing the formula all the time. The end result being that somebody who uses it may have no idea what they are ingesting. They may have no idea how strong it is or what the impact may be. So what is it? What is spice? Why would people use it? Does it make you sort of wired like meth and a little bit like cocaine? Does it make you go to sleep? What does it do?
How it's marketed, it's intended to be a synthetic form of marijuana. That's how it's marketed. But being that it keeps changing the formula, and, you know, who is changing the formula? You know, are they a chemist, a trained chemist? Are they, you know, some backyard clandestine type lab? You know, who is changing the formula? So you never know what you're taking. And the scary part is nowadays, the kids, they really don't care what they're taking. They just take it. The result is you don't know how it's going to affect you. It could affect somebody, maybe like marijuana, maybe you get intoxicated, or it could affect you like somebody with mental illness. You know what I mean? It's like you don't know what the end result is going to be.
Lieutenant Byrd, Lieutenant Farias handles the east side of Hawaii Island. You handle the west. Are you seeing these same new drugs, I'll say spice or MDMA? What is MDMA? I don't know what that is.
So MDMA is just another acronym for it's ecstasy is basically what it is. As far as the spice is concerned, we've seen it on a handful of occasions. It's not something we run across on the Area 2 side frequently.
Back in the day, way back in the day, LSD was a drug that people used like during the 70s. I just heard somebody on the radio, it was a musician, say that he became far more creative when he took LSD. Are we seeing that drug here still? Is that something on your wavelength?
We rarely see it. I mean, we just recovered some a few days ago from a guy that's associated with the raves here. And so up until then, we haven't seen it for a while. Well, like I say, we just recovered just a tab that he had in his possession. As far as the ecstasy is concerned, it's a methamphetamine that has a hallucinogenic quality to it. That's why it's so popular with the kids nowadays. You know, you get that hallucinogenic quality that the acid had, but you also have the upper, you know, can dance all night. The dangers of that is that it really elevates your core body temperature, and, you know, people end up dying.
Not a good thing. Let me ask one more question about marijuana. I know that Lieutenant Byrd said that you are very aware of people with medical marijuana licenses because they are legally allowed to use marijuana. But there have been accusations, and in fact, there was one individual, I believe, in the Mountain View area who was complaining that he has the medical marijuana license, yet the police were constantly coming in and arresting him. So, Lieutenant Farias, on the east side of Hawaii Island, to what degree is your focus on marijuana, marijuana users, marijuana growers?
You know, we don't really have a stand on medical marijuana. We don't have a stand on medical marijuana. But we do investigate criminal activity, which illegal drug cultivation, illegal drug dealing is a criminal act. And so we do investigate all drug dealers. The problem I see with some of the cases that we come across involving medical marijuana is that they are over their amount of plants, what they are allowed, and that's where the problem comes into play.
You both mentioned that you confiscate what sounds to me like a large amount of drugs. What happens to those drugs?
The drugs get destroyed. It usually stays in evidence for a lot longer than we would want it to, but due to the adjudication process, you know, it does take a while, so we end up holding on to it for a while. But then it gets destroyed. If we're destroying marijuana, we'll dispose of it at the local dump. It's not just thrown away. We sit there and we watch them mix it in with the garbage until we're satisfied that it's no longer useful to anyone. And so that's taken care of that way, and the hard drugs are incinerated.
I'd also like to mention there is a drug take-back program, and you mentioned that you all oftentimes do find prescription drugs that may have been diverted from a good use. And people should really know that if you have those kind of drugs and you're no longer needing them, if you no longer use them, you can always take them. I think it's once or twice a year, each side of the island. Tell us about that.
Usually once a year, DEA puts on a pharmaceutical take-back program. And basically what that is any prescription medication that you no longer need, maybe it's expired, you can come and turn it in at the specified locations at that time.
What else should we talk about relative to drugs, Lieutenant Byrd?
I would just say making the community aware, asking for their help. As we discussed, there's 29 of us assigned to our vice sections island-wide. We're a big island, 29 officers. That really pales in comparison to what we're seeing on the Big Island, so definitely seek assistance from the community. And if you see something or you suspect something, please call our ICE hotline for the Area 2 side. That's 329-0423, and for the Area 1 side, that's 934-8423.
Okay, and if they forget those numbers, they could just call the main number and ask for one of you, I assume. And if somebody wants to just talk, if they have a concern, if they want to have a confidential conversation, Lieutenant Farias, Lieutenant Byrd, can they just call you on the phone and maybe talk? Because I know that the issue of drugs might be sensitive for somebody if they think they have a family member who's a user or a dealer.
Yeah, definitely. I get those calls daily. So, yeah, you can call 961-2253, 961-2253.
Lieutenant Byrd, where can we reach you?
My number is 326-4646, and my extension is 226.
Thank you so much, Lieutenant Sherry Byrd.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Lieutenant Mark Farias.
Thank you very much.
And to our listeners, thank you so much for being with us for Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. We are sponsored by Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitar at Queen's Shops and on Ali'i Drive. I'll see you next Sunday morning for my first talk story with mayor candidates, this one being Pete Hoffman. Until next Sunday, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahoi ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us, info@lava1053.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.